direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together, and in the first hour, I am delighted to be joined by Steve Probst. A big apology. He was slated for last week, and somehow I forgot it. And I guarantee you, nothing I was saying was more important than this. I was just leafing through those old-school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM singles, and we'll talk about that. That's his latest work, but you know, there's 10. And if you were listening a couple weeks ago, it was Steve's What Was the First Rock and Roll Record that he wrote with Jim Dawson. That was an argument settler as far as I'm concerned, but there are 50 from which to choose. We'll talk about that too. But right now, Steve, again, apologies and welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, thank you. No time like the present, as they say.
Yes, exactly. Now, I'm not sure, but speak to me a minute because I'm not sure about the quality of this phone call.
Okay, well, do you want me to... Okay, hold on.
Okay. Yeah, I was not 100% sure about that, but we will.
How's that? Is that a little better?
That is absolutely better. Okay.
Okay.
So as go ahead.
Quit using my old dial phone.
Yeah, nothing like them. Nothing like them. All right,
okay.
So now, as I was saying a few weeks ago, I pointed to what was the first rock and roll record when somebody asked me just that question. And, of course, you have 50 wonderful contenders of this, so it's obviously not clear-cut, though personally, for a lot of reasons, I go with G by the Crows, which is in there. But you never said in the book that I recall what your number one choice would be if we had to put you against the wall and say, pick one.
Okay, sort of by coincidence, I was invited by the Library of Congress to contribute an article about a record that I consider to be very important. So I wrote an essay on that particular record. A lot of information I gleaned from two people, Ike Turner and Joe Bihari. How's that for a...
Well, yes.
A lineup.
Clearly, the Bihari brothers were legends, and of course, Ike publicly known for all of his misdeeds, but what a hell of a writer and performer.
Yeah. No, that I'll save the suspense. The record I wrote about was Rocket 88 by
Jackie Brinson. Yeah.
Although Ike Turner should have gotten artist credit, somehow Chess Records decided that the vocalist deserved the credit. So there you go.
Okay. All right.
That's the record that I'd recommend. And if you want to check the Library of Congress website, there's an article written by, guess who? Me.
That's great.
On that very site. Well, thank you.
That's wonderful. Yeah, well, and a big thank you because, you know, so many of these songs will disappear when we do. And it's only works like yours that keep some of them alive. Oh, yeah, there are ones that will last forever because of a lot of reasons. But most of them, they're going to vanish when we do. So to have books like yours, it preserves something forever.
Well, I hope so. And I guess that's probably the case.
Yeah.
And I think it's a task. Worth the trouble. You know what I mean?
Well, it is. And the nice thing about it is that you started doing this when the bulk of the artists were still alive. And,
right.
You know, that makes it really special. Years ago, I did market profiles for radio markets, and I was lazy. I only did 11, and this was the mid-80s. And to this day, I say to John, my greatest regret in life is that I didn't do them all when everybody was still alive, because it's too late now.
Yeah, well, hey, you do what you can. There's a story related to that. I first went on the air in late 1981 at KLON out of Cal State Long Beach, and it was about 3 or 4 months later, without warning, in the parking lot as I arrived for my Sunday morning show, up pull 4 black Cadillacs. In these 4 black Cadillacs, out pops Vernon Green, Chuck Higgins. This is without warning. I had no idea these guys are going to be there.
Wow.
Vernon Green, Chuck Higgins, Brenton Wood, and Don Julian, and a couple of their associates. And Don Julian engineered this whole thing. Of course, it would have been nice if he had told me. Then I could have brought in some of their records to, so the interview would make a little bit of sense. But just imagine.
Oh, wow.
Those guys are no longer out there doing their thing.
Brenton's still alive, isn't he?
Well, yeah. Okay, Brenton's still alive.
Yeah.
I was lucky to interview him several times. But Chuck, Vernon, and Don.
All gone. Forget it. All gone. And that is just classic. And I'll bet that's one of those shows you wish would have lasted for hours and hours.
Yeah. Well, I think 3 hours was enough. I was exhausted.
Oh, I'm sure you were. But, you know, with talent like that and so many wonderful L.A. stories, I just couldn't get enough of that. So that's great. Now, do you have a recording of that anywhere?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, good.
I have a recording of that show.
You should put it online.
I should do something with it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to hear it first. I was just getting used to being on air, so it probably wasn't my most professional-sounding moment.
It would have been fine, yeah. Because what we would have heard from them would have been just great. Now, those old-school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll and soul, 45 RPM singles, 46 to 87. Okay, you did the selecting. What caused a record to make the cut?
Just me thinking that record would be of interest, and oftentimes it's because I had an interview or some sort of interesting knowledge about that record. But not all records, you know, some off-the-wall records, a lot of well-known records. It was just arbitrary choices, you know, records I thought were the most influential. It wasn't, it wasn't all hits, but there were a lot of hits in there. So there was no scientific process or artistic evaluation. It was just records I thought would be of, I guess, greatest interest to the most people. There's a couple of records I wish I had put in there. I can name three of them.
What are they?
You had to ask.
Of course.
Saturday Night Fish Fry by Louis Jordan.
Yeah.
I had a great story about that because that wasn't the original of that song. It was originally by Floyd Dixon with the Eddie Williams group.
I didn't know
I had
that.
Floyd talking about it, and I could have easily added it, and I don't know why. You know, it was a collapse. Not Fade Away by Buddy Holly.
Okay.
And I was taken to task on that. Okay. Fair enough. And a whole lot of shaking going on.
Okay.
That's a record of great interest because that was originally by Big Maybelle, and then there was a country version by, who was it, Roy Hall. And then finally Jerry Lee Lewis picked up on it and made raved it up a whole bunch and, rocked it out. It was Big Maybelle on her version took a phrase from an Eddie Arnold song that had been a hit about beating on that old ding dong.
Okay.
Can I say that on the radio?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. So she actually referred to an Eddie Arnold record in her original version of Whole Lot of Shaking Going On.
Well, that's a great story. Now, there are three very worthwhile choices, but I got to tell you, I mourn the fact that Saturday Night Fish Fry wasn't in there, so we're going to talk about that. I'm talking to Steve Propes, and it's P-R-O-P-E-S. You can go to Amazon.com, and I'd say absolutely pick up these books, as many as you can. Those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul, 45 RPM, 1946 to 87. And we were just talking about Jackie Brenston's Rocket 88. 1988, and that, of course, is in the book, page 10. But on page 11, we get to Peppermint Harris, and we're going to talk about him, too, coming up on WGN Radio. And we're talking about those old-school records, and you know, for many of us, the first time we heard a lot of these was on good old AM radio, usually late at night through distant signals, and it was just Nirvana. And there were so many great radios back in the days, too, those Zenith Royal 275s and things like that. Well, and then, of course, after a while, that was it for good quality reception when it came to radios. And Bob Crane was just as upset about it as the rest of us were, and he decided to do something about it. And boy, did he. Every radio that Bob Crane has designed has one thing in common: terrific AM and FM reception, just like the days of yesteryear. And on top of that, there's so many different things from which to choose that have additional features. One of them is the CC Skywave SSB2, and it is a gem. It's a great travel radio because you get the aviation band and a lot more. You get, 400 presets? Yeah, and it's all digital. It's got a dial, a light, and an alarm, and a timer, and a clock, and all those things, which you would expect. But you wouldn't expect how good the reception is, and you wouldn't expect the aviation band. You also get single sideband, which can be a real gem, plus NOAA weather and NOAA alert. It is just a terrific radio to get things that, well, your smartphone won't get them, that's for sure. And you can check it out. Go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. Read about the CC Skywave SSB2, the newest edition of C. Crane CC Skywave line, and it's just wonderful. It weighs only 8 ounces. It fits in the palm of your hand, and like I say, it is just a supreme travel radio. Now, if you can't go online for some reason, you can call them. They've got the best customer service in the world. 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. Yes, you'll get a real person who will answer all your questions, and you can order by phone if you want. If you want a catalog, they'll mail you one free of charge, put it in the mail to you the next day. So it's just terrific. But if you can go online, not only great products, but great information about radio too. So that's ccradio.com. Look at the CC Skywave SSB2. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
You took my love and did it by me wrong. Still was satisfied. Stand like my name all the time. It's a sin and shame the way you lied, but it's all right.
It's all right.
Any way you do,
it's alright.
I can't tell you how bad I feel. Wait until it happens to you. I meet my friends, I try to wear a smile, try to hold my head up high. You know, sometimes it looks just a bit so bad, I have to steal away and cry. But it's alright.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is Peppermint Harris, and Wait Until It Happens to You, 1967 on Jewel. Yeah, Stan's Music Shop in Shreveport, Louisiana, mail order supreme. Of course, I mail ordered it, and at the time, I never even put it together with it's the same Peppermint Harris, like there are two, but I don't know why I didn't put it together, with I Got Loaded, which was number one on Aladdin in 1951, and it is in those old school records. So my first question to Steve Probst is, what happened to him between 1951 and 67?
Well, he did have some recordings, but I wouldn't call him exactly a super active performer during that era. Now, I Got Loaded in the 1970s. Believe it or not, I used to frequent a couple of bars, one in Sunset Beach. God, I forget the name of it. But I Got Loaded was still on the jukebox, and it was also a big jukebox record in taverns in Avalon on Catalina Island.
Oh, yeah.
So those are both sort of historic drinking spots. And what's more appropriate than I Got Loaded by Peppermint Harris, and Aladdin Records put out some other records by him, and none of them really hit. So he might have gotten a little bit discouraged, that's all I can say. I didn't really have a chance to hobnob with anybody associated with him, or I would have loved to have heard that story myself. He was on Jewel Records.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, let me see what I can pull up here in my I got a database in my collection, believe it or not.
Oh, wow, okay. How nice.
And I'll keep asking me questions, and I'll come up with what I
have.
Very
good. We can certainly do that. And, of course, the flip side of that was it's you, yes, it's you, and you'd hear that occasionally on the jukeboxes. But like I say, other than that, I didn't know. Now, it was covered the same year by Earl Bostick, and then the one that surprised me in 56 was the Cadets. So.
That's right. I got loaded by... That was one of their many cover versions.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually covered Heartbreak Hotel.
Right.
like we're gonna embarrass Elvis Presley, and we're gonna have the number one hit out of Heartbreak Hotel. I think Heartbreak Hotel was. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I heard a click. Mm-mm. I think somebody's listening in.
Just the CIA.
It has to do with Lester Beharie, the sort of black sheep of the Beharie family, who was relegated to Memphis and ran Media Records. He never got along with the other Beharie brothers, and I think he had something to do with Elvis. Maybe he tried to get Elvis to record on Meteor. I'm not quite sure. I've heard stories about that, but I think there's a connection between him and Elvis and the Cadets recording Heartbreak Hotel. But we were talking about I Got Loaded. Yeah, Earl Bostick, who was it? Terrell. Here we go.
Terrell, the one I'm thinking of is Ty Terrell, who was with the Robins, but that's the only
Terrell
I can think of first. But Lester was the oldest Beharie, too.
There was a vocalist on the Earl Bostick I Got Loaded, but I can't think of
who
it was.
Yes, there was. Oh, damn. Well, it'll come to both of us, no doubt. But yeah, like I say, Les was the oldest of the Beharie brothers, and I wondered how he got relegated to Memphis, but he did quite a lot there.
Oh yeah, he was put out a lot of rockabilly, and he had Little Milton for a while.
Right.
He had Rufus
right.
Thomas for a while, so he had some of the big stars out of the Memphis scene, and I think Media Records is mostly famous for rockabilly sides.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
But get it, son, Meteor.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was so much going on, and of course, just like before, Sex Satellite, which was mostly country, but nonetheless,
Satellite. There's another.
Yeah, exactly.
Things in the sky.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
So there you have
it. Got it solved.
All right. Well, we're talking to Steve Propes. If you want to call, if you've got questions, sometimes you call and ask me stuff, and I don't know. Well, Steve does. So 888-876-5593. 8888-ROLLYE on WGN Radio.
In every beat of my heart, there's a beat for you. Conversations, you're my inspiration. Everything I do, I'll do for you.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that's the original, Every Beat of My Heart, on Federal, 1952, by the Royals. You know him better as Hank Ballard and the Midnighters, but there's quite a story there, and it is in those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM singles. And Steve Propes wrote it. Steve Propes joins me. So if you got any questions, this is the guy to ask. 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. And so, Steve, there is quite the story of Every Beat of My Heart.
Before we get to that, though, I've found another version of I Got Loaded that might interest you, and that is none other than Johnny Flamingo. I do not have the record. I've never heard his...
Yes.
One of Huggy Boy's bright ideas. So we'll have Johnny Flamingo record I Got Loaded.
Yes.
He put it on Canton Records, not Canton, as right. in China, but Canton. He corrected me on that because he came from Canton, Ohio. So that solves that problem. And he had Caddy Records because he was told he'd get enough money to buy a caddy with that label. But I think he took it all to the racetrack.
Well,
anyway,
guaranteed. But, you know, as we're talking about this, I miss Huggy Boy. He was absolutely an original.
He called me up. I was out of town. Sylvia took the call. And he wanted me to, he was going to buy some time on, what was that station? Was it KGIL?
Yes. Well, they were also the people, the Beatons, who controlled that 1090 Express where he was.
Well, he was going to do a midnight show, and he wanted to have me co-DJ it with, which would have just been like a mind blower for me.
Yeah.
But by the time I got back from wherever I was, he was in the hospital because he had suffered some injuries in a fall, and that was just about the end of it. Anyway, yeah, I miss him tremendously. Every Beat of My Heart,
yes.
The Royals.
Yes.
Johnny Otis wrote it.
Right.
He was sent to Detroit to conduct by Sid Nathan of King Records, King Federal.
Right.
He was sent to Detroit to conduct a audition a bunch of group singers.
Right.
And he auditioned Little Willie John. Dig this lineup: Little Willie John, Jackie Wilson, and the Royals. And I think he wrote Every Beat of My Heart because Jackie Wilson sang some pop big band song, and Johnny Otis knew that he would not make it with that kind of material, so he wanted Jackie Wilson to sing a more hip, up-to-date modern song, so he wrote Every Beat of My Heart for that purpose, and Sid Nathan still turned down Jackie Wilson. He okayed Little Willie John. So Johnny gave it to the Royals. It was their very first record. The flip side, called All Night Long, Wynonna Harris sings a part of it. So that's a little bit of Royals, Midnighters. This is before Hank Ballard joined the group, type of history.
That's interesting. I thought that Hank Ballard had been there. I thought that he came right before it. So it was after.
No, he replaced somebody. The first record you can really hear him on is Get It by the Royals.
Okay.
Then they recorded Work With Me Annie. He had to change their name to Midnighters because King Records signed the Five Royals, and they were spending all their time, the Royals and the Five Royals, taking other people's bookings, pretending to be the other group, so there was a lot of competition between them.
Well, what I loved,
so King,
I was going to say, what I loved about the Five Royals is there were actually six of them.
That's true. But it's better to have six, because if one gets sick, you at least have five.
That's
That was explained to me by somebody. Marvin Spencer, otherwise known as Sheridan Spencer, shared that with me. Okay, or maybe it was Al Frazier. Oh, man, I'll tell you. The people, you know, I mean, like you say, they ain't around no more.
No, they're not. They were independent businessmen who, you know, never had to go to a stockholder meeting. And, you know, there was not much money on the line for any of this. And they could do whatever they wanted. Now, Sid Nathan, of course, there's a character in and of itself. But,
oh, yeah.
Not surprising to me that he would say, I'm Nixon, Little Willie John, I'm Nixon, Jackie Wilson, and all this. Because at the time, he was making money with groups. So he probably wanted another group.
Well, yeah, but of course, Jackie Wilson did appear on his label after he replaced Clyde McFadder in the Dominoes after Clyde formed the Drifters. So probably said Nathan didn't know it was Jackie Wilson that replaced
exactly.
Clyde.
Exactly. I wouldn't have cared, you know, as far as he was concerned.
True.
It's the Dominoes. Yeah, oh, that's that's just terrific. Now, you've interviewed so many of these people, and also for the people that you didn't interview, you've done so much research. And so I want to know, what are some of the really strange things you uncovered?
Oh, strange things. Wow. Well, okay, this might not seem that strange, but Phil Spector he was assigned to record a group on the song called Puddin' and Tane. So he took the group, what were they calling themselves at the time? They later became the Untouchables. Just before they were the Untouchables, I think he gave them the name the Alley Cats, and they recorded Puddin' and Tane. But was it the songwriter or the publisher decided he wanted to have two different groups record the same song and test market the record, send out both versions of the record and see which one caught on. Mm-hmm. So he had Phil produce Puddin' and Tane, and then he had another group called the Splendors also record Puddin' and Tane. Well, the Splendors weren't that splendid in terms of sales, and the Alley Cats, their version produced by Phil Spector, not surprisingly, hit the charts and was an okay hit. Of course, the Alley Cats never recorded under that name again. That was definitely a one-shot deal that was a great record, and they went on to...
Well, of course, Bobby Sheen was in the Alley Cats.
Bobby Sheen sang the high part on that. He was not a regular member. That was, what was his name?
Well, you had mentioned Sheridan Spencer, of course.
Sheridan Spencer.
Right. Gary Pipkin was in that, I think. And,
Anyway, go ahead.
That's
one of several stories.
Yeah.
But,
well, there's another way to ask a similar question, since you had to interview all these people. And unfortunately, I had to do that for a while when I was producing Soundtrack of the 60s, and it was one of my least favorite things. And
why?
I just didn't enjoy it, some of the people, and some of the people didn't want to be interviewed. And the strangest story I had was actually Tony Williams of the Platters, who clearly was not wanting to be interviewed and decided he'd do it in the bathroom. And good taste prohibits me from telling you the rest of that story, but you can figure it out yourself. And so as I'm remembering that, I'm thinking to myself, there must have been some strange interviews.
Well, I never did a bathroom interview, thank goodness.
Yes.
That I can recall. God, strange settings for interviews.
Or people who didn't want to be interviewed, or strange comments, you know, one of those surreal kind of things. You walk away from the interview just shaking your head.
Oh, God. George Mottola was sort of, he threatened Specialty Records on the air. He was going to sue them because they put out a Jesse Belvin track on a CD that incorporated some unissued Jesse Belvin material. And he sort of went off on the air. What he was going to do to Specialty Records. Of course, Specialty was very much entitled to put out that material. But that was a song that George Mottola had designated for Jesse to record after Guess Who had settled down a bit.
Yeah.
And, of course, Jesse never got a chance to record again. I can't really think of anything that was that bizarre, because people would come into the station. I remember I was interviewing, I think it was Hank Ballard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's a story about Hank Ballard. I didn't have any connection with him. A fan of my show, a guy named Jim Tucker, otherwise known as Wild Jimmy, a disbarred lawyer from Texas who was caught with marijuana, oh my goodness, in the 1960s, was disbarred for having marijuana and was in the Long Beach area, listened to my show, said, Hank's a friend of mine, I can go to, he's appearing in Hollywood, I can go to his show, keep him up all night, that's the only way I'll get him to come to your show on Sunday morning. So that's exactly what he did. He kept him up all night. Hank came into my show. It was a fun interview. And Jim and Hank stayed in Long Beach, and they actually rented an apartment together. And then Hank and Jim went to a KLON function at the Queen Mary, and Hank ran into this woman named Teresa McNeil. Okay, that was goodbye, Wild Jimmy. Hello, Teresa. So now he's living with Teresa. Teresa works her tail off to get Hank into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, pulls it off. She is in the hotel in New York City with Hank. He's appearing in New York. Gets the call from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Hank's been elected to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, is happy, goes out into the street, gets run over by a bus or a taxi cab, I'm not sure which. That's the end of Teresa. So Hank basically lives in Teresa's house in Los Alamitos until he passes away about a decade or so later. How's that for a story?
Oh, now, was Teresa a horn player?
Teresa had no idea. She was a fan. She was the ultimate fan. She took Hank to church. She cleaned him up, got rid of the girl group, got rid of him wearing a headband, and, you know, brought about a situation where Hank was sounding like the old Hank Ballard.
No, reason I asked in the latter days, and this is probably while he was with Teresa because he cleaned up good, I'd see appearances, and there was a horn player who was definitely female, and white, too, and I always wondered, who is that? Never did find out.
Wow. Yeah. I never thought to ask.
Yeah,
I never knew.
Exactly. You know, it's sort of like in some cases asking who did the background singing, and then later you say to yourself, I really want to know that, and lost to history. We're talking to Steve Probst, who is preserving history, that is for sure. Those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul, 45 RPM singles. But as I say, there's 10 books. So, you know, one of them, I guarantee you, again, what was the first rock and roll record? A true argument settler. And, of course, probably, if I had to pick one favorite, L.A. R&B vocal groups, 1945 to 65, and more. So you can go to Amazon, just know how to spell Probst, P-R-O-P-E-S. And better yet, if you got any questions, we've got a few minutes left, and I hope you'll call 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Molly James, and that, of course, is Richie Valens. Come on, let's go. You can read about it on page 135 and 6 of those old school records. And interestingly, the flip side of that is Framed, which was originally Robin's record. You can read about that, too. Steve Probst wrote about both of them. And I got plenty of questions, but I don't want to completely hog you because we only got a few minutes, and Karen wants to join us. So let's see what we can, because Karen's got a question. I think she's actually following orders here and will in fact, ask something, because if she asks me, I'm not going to know, but you will. So, Karen, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. And my question is a group from 1962, and I remember them very well because it was the year I graduated, and the song was called Your Graduation Means Goodbye, and the group was the Cardigans.
It was on Mercury in 1957, but Steve, what do you know about it?
I don't know that much about the Cardigans. I do know that they were one of those sort of middle-of-the-road type of group, like the gay lords and the crew cuts, but yeah. I can't really give you much background on the Cardigans. You're right, they were on Mercury.
Right, they had like three records and then something on Span, and then they were gone.
Yeah. Sorry, I can't add much.
I remember this because it was 1962, the year I graduated, and I went to the School for the Visually Handicapped in Wisconsin, and of course the kids were from all over the state, and I was dating a guy who was, he was a sophomore, I was a senior. I knew when we graduated we weren't going to see each other, so somebody requested that song for the two of us. And I will never forget that.
All right.
For some odd reason.
Well, yeah, it's interesting they remembered because it was 5 years old at that time. But good deal and good story. Thank you, Karen. Appreciate it.
Can I bring up a Richie Valens story, if you don't mind?
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, I'm running out of time. So start, and if we don't finish, then that's why you'll be on next time. But tell me.
Well, this is the first 5-year increment that his death, the day the music died, so to speak, has not really been noted by the press. February of this year will be 65 years.
Yes.
So for what it's worth, I guess that particular memory is no longer not celebrated, but certainly remembered. Bob Keane thought up a whole memorial series, and there were a whole bunch of memorial concerts and memorial dances held to honor Richie in the day after the few years after his death, but basically to make money for Bob Keane.
Well,
so that's, I'm going to leave you with that. Gil Rocha, who discovered Richie Valens and was in, Richie was in his band, is still with us, believe it or not.
Oh, that's
He's
great.
Still giving me stories.
Oh, that is great. And I know you've got some great ones, and we're going to tell them next time, because I love the way the police came to Bob Keane's door. And well, you'll tell the story. We know where it's going. And truly hilarious. And also Bob Keane talking about how if he wrote it, he could never sing it the same way twice.
Yeah, that's actually probably very much the case. So, always a pleasure to be chit-chatting with you about the music we both love.
And looking forward to it again soon. Thank you, Steve.
Well, you're welcome. Good night.
All right. So those old school records, check it out. All you have to do is go to Amazon, P-R-O-P-E-S, Steve Propes.